Tropical Smoothie Cafe welcomes you to Tropic Time. I'll be your concierge. Our beach bites, including made-to-order wraps and bowls, are full of tropic vibes. And our fresh-from-the-blender smoothies make you feel absolutely radiant. It's like a wellness retreat for your taste buds. You're on Tropic Time now at Tropical Smoothie Cafe. Got breakfast plans? At Tropical Smoothie Cafe, hitting your protein goals is a breeze. With our smoothies, bowls, wraps, and diets featuring up to 32 grams of protein.
It may not surprise you to learn that FootJoy is the number one shoe on the PGA Tour. You can see it very clearly whenever and however you watch professional golf. But what you may not know is that this is the 80th consecutive year that FootJoy is number one on tour, dating back to when shoe counts were first taken in 1945. From the smooth swings of yesterday to the powerful athletic game, players have relied on FootJoy shoes to perform their best. Some players, like Justin Thomas, choose the new Hyperflex for a terrific blend of athletic style, flexibility, and targeted stability. Many others, including Adam Scott and Will Zalatoris, opt for Premier Series, a blend of modern performance and classic styling. For 80 years, the best players in the world have trusted FootJoy golf shoes. Find the FootJoy shoe for you at FootJoy.com.
The Back Nine Boys Golf Show. All about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
Welcome to the show. The Back Nine Boys is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Play the Tour B ball today with Mindset Technology. By the Club at Sea Palms. By PXG, you've never played like this before, period. By RSM, proud sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community. By Clubcar, the leader in sport utility and personal vehicles. And by CJ's Italian Restaurant, voted best pizza, known for their deep dish and thin crust. Check out their full menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com. We are on the phone with Joshua Passarello, founder and chief visionary at Golf for Life Ministries. And Josh, thanks for being on the show. We appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Rich. It's an honor and a privilege.
Well, tell me more about Golf for Life Ministries. I mean, that's something you've done for a while. You're the founder. What was your vision when you started this?
The original vision came to pass when I was in a program known as Adult Teen Challenge. That's the former name as we know it now. It was at that time in 2007, it was called Teen Challenge, and it was a faith-based organization. It was an international, it's also international. It's founded by Pastor David Wilkerson, and it really targets individuals, men and women, that struggle with life-controlling issues, whether it's substance abuse or alcohol or drugs or whatnot. So at that point in time, that was where I was. I was at a very low point in life. I just got out of the military as I served, or I actually went to basic training for the Army in Fort Benning, Georgia. And it led to me being out processed with existing prior to service, as I injured my knee in basic training. And so I hit a rock bottom with all the medications that they prescribed me. And it just led into a further life of destruction and physical codependency and addiction. So I actually got locked up, and I needed to really take a step back and a deep look into where I was heading and where I was going. And so after some of my family members intervened, they suggested a program that they were very familiar with, and it had a high success rate, and it was faith-based. So I surrendered and went into Teen Challenge in Carthage, North Carolina, right outside of Pinehurst, October 2nd, did phase one. And then once you complete phase one, you go to phase two. And that's up in Rearsburg, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia, near Hershey. And at that point, it's a 250-man facility on 300 acres. And I got to a point in my relationship with Christ, and I said, Lord, I got a mouthpiece. I got gifts and talents. I have a golf degree from the Golf Academy of America. I played college golf. I understand the mechanics. And so I'm going to give my gifts and talents to you, Lord, and if you give them back to me, I'll use them for the kingdom. And so I had a dream one night, and then I had a vision, and it was very clear. And he gave me the vision of and the what we know today, the ministry of Golf for Life Ministries, which is as military as we are, we love acronyms, and so it stands for God Offers Love and Forgiveness for Life. And each component of the four is Father, Son, Holy Spirit, plus yourself is the four components, and then equals life. And by accepting our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, he'll give you a life of freedom, a life abundantly, a life eternally, and he'll give you a life full of purpose. And so fast forward to this, to today, that vision, as God is very specific and direct, while I was in Teen Challenge, it was a three-prong approach. Phase one is marketing and advertising products and services. Phase two is curriculum and sermons, utilizing all social media platforms. And then phase three is an acquisition of golf courses that we can utilize those facilities as training, rewiring, neurological transformation centers, or I call them discipleship programs,
right,
for our first responders, firefighters, police officers, and military veterans that struggle with or might be struggling with PTSD, mental illness, substance abuse, or even death by despair.
Right. So, Josh, when did you and how has the program gone by bringing golf into focus? How did you and why did you bring golf into it?
Well, golf is an outlet for me that allows me to express my gifts and talents, whether it's in business, whether it's in communication, whether it's in teaching, and the people that we get to play with on a day-to-day basis, or in tournaments or charity events, the relationships that are established, we're able to cultivate, and I'm just able to use those skill sets to connect with others and give back. And it's nice to be able to share that with others that might be pursuing just a day-to-day activity that they need to implement in their normal weekly or daily routine, or a monthly routine, or guys that are trying to pursue the game from a college level. But we always say that, go ahead.
Well, they've often said that golf is one of those games, sports, that is so much like life. I mean, there's ups, there's downs, there's bad shots, there's good shots, there's penalties, there's this. It's very disciplined, much like the military. But I'm fascinated by the golf. And you're also doing something in September 11th and November 11th. Tell us about that, because you're working with in North Carolina on September 11th with Special Forces.
We've actually got approached by the Guinness World Records due to the fact of the nature of Golf for Life and JCM Consulting, JCM Marketing, working with other nonprofits that try to further the game through fundraisers and 100-hole marathons. And so in 2022, I was introduced to a gentleman by the name of JC Carbonella, and we call him Coach JC, and he actually introduced me to how he raised a boatload of money for Tunnel to Towers by walking 100 holes in less than 12 hours. And I was fascinated by that type of format. And obviously Tunnel to Towers is a very credible organization. And so I wanted to learn how we did it. And we realized we were both the same weight roughly around that time at 315 pounds. And in order for him to get in shape, he started implementing a specific diet and walking 36 holes 5 days a week and lost 154 pounds in 22 months and was able to formulate a team and execute that 100-hole marathon. So I flew out to Edmond, Oklahoma to learn more and meet him personally, paid for the curriculum and implemented it. And when I came back in 2022, I actually injured my knee on the golf course that you were referencing for this Guinness World Record that we're going to host and on September 11th. And very funny story, but it was a part of the journey. It's a part of how God had to humble me, but I actually tore my lateral meniscus and broke the tip of my tibia on July 24th of 2022 at Deerbrook in Shelby, North Carolina. And so during that operation, I was fortunate enough to have my prayer team surround me, and they prophesied that I did not have an ACL tour, and I was going to get back to playing this game and start rehabilitating myself to train to do a golf marathon. And so I flew myself back to John Hopkins and was on the surgery table, and I played my favorite song as I gripped the doctor's hands and the nurses, and by Josh Carney. The name of the song is called Nothing Else, and went under and then came out, and the doctor said, look, man, instead of a 9-month recovery, we were able to remove the bone that was chipped off, repair your lateral meniscus, and your ACL was just strained. It wasn't tore.
Wow.
And so I learned about a product, because this was my third injury of knee injuries in my course of from 2001 to 2022. But I learned about a product called LifeWave, which is a stem cell patch made by and created by David Schmidt for the Navy SEALs. And I was very adamant on not utilizing any type of pain medication due to the addictive side of it. And so I flew down to Orlando, and they removed the fascia out of my knee, and I just put the patch on, the X39, and I was standing in 8 days, walking in 18 days, and 31 days after surgery, I was back at Deerbrook and shot one over with Roy James and the crew. It's awesome. So now I've just been training myself as I've been traveling, working with other organizations like PTSD USA and Warrior Golf Academy and Wounded Warrior Foundation. And I started consulting, doing business consulting and fundraising events for an organization called 100 for 22 out of Edmond, Oklahoma, which was founded by Josh. Well, which was taken over from JC, and now the new president is Josh Shears. And I said, look, you know, I don't think I can participate in the 100-hole marathon, but I think due to where we're at in 2024, we could do a 126-hole marathon. And so I negotiated the terms at Cleveland Country Club in Shelby, North Carolina, and November 18th, those guys from the organization came in and performed 126 holes in right around 10 hours. And prior to that event, I said, I think we should capitalize on September 11th. Why don't we, if we're really going to expand the reach and diversify from the 100-hole marathon model, which typically they're in the hospital for 7 days after they complete, you only can do that about two times a year, and it's not scalable. So I think we should utilize a golf simulator. So I suggested that we perform a 216-hole marathon on a golf simulator in Baltimore at Five Iron Golf on September 11th, which a firefighter out of Pittsburgh named Brian Batko and myself completed that in 5.5 hours. I did 108 He did 108, and at that time I was using LifeWave and a product called DriveForce 18, founded by Zachary Williams and his brother, which is a phenomenal product. So now I'm equipped, and I see the results of holistic products that are have no sugar, no caffeine, that are stem celled, and they have electrolytes that, you know, do some really crazy things with how the body reacts, and it helped me now sustain myself and train for what we've got coming up on September 11th and November 11th, which is what you referenced about the Guinness World Records. They asked if we would like to go after these two records that have not been achieved, and I said, "Tell me more." And they say, "Well, one is utilizing a gaming system, and one is playing a round of golf, multiple rounds of golf for a consecutive 24 hours." And I said, "Well, I think if a golf simulator is eligible rather than a gaming system, I would think that would be considered a gaming system." And they approved it. We have that scheduled on November 11th, and then September 11th will be the 24 hours where we'll light up the golf course in the evening with Glow Vibe Golf, and we'll open that up for our special forces and our first responders, and even some of the assistants in the PGA program that would like to participate.
Yeah, that'll be really a neat event. And all this, and we've got about a minute and a half left, all this kind of coincides with the 250th anniversary of the Army. I think that's really cool.
Absolutely. That's correct. We definitely want to stay in that lane and build on that storyline and execute and represent what all of our board members and board of directors and advisors, they're all Army. Either retired or active. So super exciting to be able to have.
Well, can you give us your website so our listeners can find out more about what you're doing on September 11th and November 11th and just what you're doing every day?
Absolutely. You can go to www.golfforlifeministries.org. We'll have it also on Warrior Golf Academy. .org and golffromtheheart.org. Those are some websites that you can go and get more information. And then we'll be promoting it through SI Sports Illustrated Tickets, and that awesome. That link will be out shortly on all social media platforms.
Josh, thank you for your time. Thanks for the information. Good luck coming up. Keep training and God bless. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Rich. God bless you.
At BXG, we believe you get more out of your golf clubs when you're custom fitted. This ensures that every BXG club in your bag is completely dialed in to deliver maximum performance for your swing. Golfers of every skill level should go through this process, and BXG's judgment-free fittings will make sure you're completely comfortable and satisfied.
Visit BXG.com to find a location or mobile fitter near you. BXG, you've never played like this before.
I'm Bill Steins, Director of Golf at Linville Golf Club, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles, and we're with Zachary Williams with DriveForce 18, or as they call it, DF-18. Zach, thanks for being with us. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rich. It's I'm honored that you would have me on at all.
Of course. All right, let's talk about DriveForce. What's done in your life that you wanted to create this product?
Well, I think in my life in general, like 7 years ago, I had a health scare that nearly took my life. And when I didn't kick the proverbial bucket, I, became interested in fitness. And then by extension, I became interested in nutrition. Nutritional protocols, and then from there was a very keen interest in sports nutrition, especially the elements of it which both improve your performance in the gym and your recovery after, but also its capacity for improving quality of life in general. That was that sort of two-sided of the coin interested me. And so I think it was just at the start of COVID, and I'd made my 2000th personal formulation with bags of stuff all around me in my kitchen. I said to myself, I think I might be passionate enough about this to want to start a business. And so I went looking for an area that maybe I could support with what knowledge I'd gathered up until that point. And golf came about as a bit of a fluke, really. It was at the suggestion of my brother, who is a golfer, and like Tiger Woods was the first person on his wall as a kid. I asked him to, to help me get in touch with some golfers so that I could interview them and maybe ascertain by understanding better what rounds of golf are like, where there might be areas that sports nutrition can support. And the things I discovered in those conversations were quite eye-opening. The first was that the golfer is by far the most unique endurance athlete that I've ever come across. And by that, I mean, where the golfer lacks in intensity, they make up for in this need for consistency of fine motor skills and risk management decision making. The solutions that they were using were relatively non-existent. Like, there were no real products that I could find that were catered specifically to the golfer. And the nutritionists that I was able to find, and when I dug into the nutritional research, the performance nutrition research, it was interesting to discover that, like, I could count the number of papers done on like one hand. So a lot of the suggestions I was reading about were either best guesses or extrapolations from research on athletes that couldn't be further from what the golfer is. And then sort of the decision to actually go and try to make a product was when I realized, after speaking to even just three gentlemen, that what I was listening to was a universal issue with fatigue and dehydration symptoms that were typically accruing on the back nine, that all the things I was saying leading up to this were not being addressed. And so I had a theory in my mind as to why these problems were occurring, and locked myself in a garage in Somerville, Massachusetts for 2 weeks with a gram scale and ingredients that I sourced from bulksupplements.com, and went to work creating a prototype. Validated the prototype with local golf instructors, and when they gave me the thumbs up that this thing actually did do the job that I'd hoped it was going to do, that's when I said, okay, I think we got something. We should think about actually starting the company.
Well, there's a lot of other products like Dry Force who say that they help with hydration. Some say they help with hydrating and energy and all this other kind of stuff. So what, in a few short words, if this was in an elevator, you and I were there, what makes Dry Force better than all those others that are out there right now?
I would say that from an energy component, it really promotes natural energy as opposed to a stim stacked approach with caffeine or what have you. But besides that, if you're using Gatorade or if you're using a Celsius energy drink, you're using a pocket knife, whereas Dry Force is more like a Swiss Army knife, because in one serving you get, four or five products. And unlike the other products that are available, which can be very disparate in nature, if you want to get like a full effects, full spectrum kind of result, it's a single serving pre-round for a post a back nine post-round problem.
Okay, so when do you recommend someone uses it? Is it prior to the round or prior to the back nine?
It is what I found to be the most effective way, and there is a little bit of individuality that goes into like really fine-tuning it, but I recommend that a player starts consuming it maybe 20 minutes before they hit first tee, and they finish it across, the third or fourth hole. And then if they've done that, because I'll bring it back to a practical sense, you don't have to worry anymore for the rest of the round what to eat or drink when and where in order to maintain steady performance from start to finish. And that doesn't mean to say that, if you feel peckish, don't eat. And if you want to have a sip of water, don't drink it. What I mean to say is you no longer actually have to say in your mind, okay, I've prepared my trail mix and I've prepared my Gatorades and I need to make sure I have a handful at hole three and six and finish an entire Gatorade by hole nine, kind of a thing.
Yeah, I got you. And fatigue is one of those things that usually comes, unfortunately, on the back nine for a lot of folks, no matter what their age, depending upon if it's a extremely hot day, if it's whatever. But those are the things that I think that really alter any golfer's performance is the fatigue factor.
It does. And, you gotta, the way that I like to think about it is going back to my comment about how the golfer is the most unique endurance athlete. So as the body gets tired across a 4 to 6 hour period, the body is not aware that it's playing a game like golf where fine motor skills are paramount.
Right.
As it gets tired, it is starting to prioritize larger muscle groups because, it's preparing for a tiger to pop out of the woods and you have enough in you to like book it. Right. But with a game like golf where, if the fine motor skills are affected and your club face moves a millimeter to the left of where you were intending it to be, your ball's going 100 yards in the opposite direction. And, that adds one or two strokes to your game.
At least.
At least, right.
Yeah,
so
right.
Drive Force as a product for golfers specifically is it's about preemptively getting in front of those issues that inevitably can crop up. And removing the variables that otherwise you'd have to worry about if you were to try to maintain, your body through a fueled and a hydrative like protocol.
Right.
We saw that actually with our first college team, the Colorado Christian University. They were the first team to use us last season. They ended up winning their first ever national championship. And the coaches and the players, gave us quite a bit of credit. Like Stan Sayers and Mark Hull especially talked about how when you watched their players play round after round, and especially on the last 4 to 5 holes of every round of every tournament that they played, as a unit, they were more consistently stronger than the other teams that just seemed to demonstrate more volatility, across their players and across their days. They didn't win this past year, but they ended up being the runner-ups and ended with, I believe, a very impressive run of 107-1 tournament.
Wow.
Record.
That's pretty good. Yeah. So
Where
can someone get Drive Force? Is it just online at this point? And if so, give us that online presence so we can let our listeners know.
Yeah, if anybody wants to try it, it's driveforce.golf, G-O-L-F. We might be in a handful of local shops here in Massachusetts, but that's just something I'm scratching the surface of as being in the startup world I'm trying to make headways with.
Sure, I gotcha. So one of the other important things about these powders or mixes that you have with water is taste. And a lot of folks are very picky about that. So how did you go about getting the two kinds of flavors that you have? I'm sure there was a lot of tasting and a lot of changes and before you finally came down with the right formula.
Well, this is an uncomfortable topic for me. As a company in the supplement space, we've hit pretty much every snag in the production run possible.
Okay.
you know, one thing that happened with our last run, which is the two flavors that we had, was they let us stock out in May of 2023, and we didn't get resupplied until October 18th of that year.
Oh,
yeah, that was soul crushing. But the last thing that they did, and this is a group in California, which I'll never work with again. They said they were doing it to help save time, but I learned that not to be the case later, but they outsourced the co-packing of the product to a co-packer in Texas.
Hmm.
And what they did, or didn't do rather, was package it correctly. So they didn't put the right desiccant packs in it, which when you're dealing with a formula like Dryforce, which has a lot of hydroscopic materials, and what
right.
that means is left in the open air, it draws water to itself. By the time it arrived at Texas, it turned into cement. And so they had to spend a month milling it back down into a powder.
Oh, my gosh. So
I'm saying that just to be transparent. The flavors that I had approved were not the flavors that ultimately arrived. And that's not to say that they taste bad, but they definitely don't taste as I intended. Now,
okay.
having said that, it is true that some people, you know, are picky, but, you know, it's like the case with the Colorado Christian University. They initially hated the citrus breeze and would only drink the tropical blast. But then later, when they ran out of tropical blast, they, because it was now a non-negotiable must-have for their tournament play,
right?
They used the citrus breeze, and they all looked at each other and said, why did we not like this in the first place? Okay. But, you know, that's just to say that there's maybe a bit of a acquired taste factor for some people. But at the same time, you know, at the end of the day, they were using it rain or shine, no matter what.
Right.
Because it was solving a very big pain point that they as a team experienced when playing. And so at that point, it didn't matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, golf can be an endurance. You're not over the ball very long if you look at it at a four and a half hour round. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think you're probably less than 5 minutes total for the whole round, depending upon, let's say, if you shoot under 90 or under 100, you're still not over the ball more than 5 minutes total if you add
right.
it all up. And I think that's where on the back nine, especially as you mentioned earlier, those last four holes, I mean, you get to 15 through 18, and it's like not only have you lost focus, you're trying to overdrink or you're trying to over trail mix.
Right.
you recommend one packet at the beginning, finish it off before the fifth or sixth hole, and you should be good to go for the rest. Or do you recommend maybe adding another one on the back nine?
No, it was always designed to be a single serving solution
okay.
for
okay.
a 4 to 6 hour period.
Okay.
And, you know, on the subject of that last four holes thing, you know, it's actually not a anecdotal thing. There's a gentleman, you may be or may not be familiar with him, named David Bisbee. He wrote a book, Back on Course, runs a group, Back on Course Golf, that teaches how to utilize golf as a business tool. But prior to all of that, he was the general manager of the Seven Canyons in Sedona, Arizona. And the last thing that he did, or one of the last things, was to rearrange the hole structure. And when they got their new ratings, the director of golf and he looked at each other and said, you know, this is kind of off, because the rating we just got is not representative of how both of us know our course plays.
Right.
So they decided to do a little bit of an experiment, and they began playing their course starting at different holes for hole one, while combining data that they were collecting from all the shotgun starts that they were hosting. And what they found after 2 months or 3 months of doing this was that on average, regardless of how difficult the holes were by ratings, the last four always scored as if they were the most difficult. So they could all be par threes on the last four, but they would score as if they were par fives or sixes. And Dave himself looked at his own historical data and he never just he never thought to look at his data in that way. And then he saw that he himself was exhibiting that same trend. He was on average one over par on the last four holes. Anyway,
Right.
I'm getting to my point to, plug Drive Force. So he
Right,
found
right.
me through a post I made on LinkedIn. And he hadn't really considered the idea that maybe it was a fueling issue. He thought, well, maybe there's it's because there's an inordinate amount of
And we've got about
weed.
30 seconds, so.
Anyway, I met him at the PGA show, and he came and told me that since he started using the product, his back nine 4-hole average went from one over par to one under par.
Hey, it works. I'm sold. All right, give us the website one more time.
It's www.driveforce.golf. I really hope folks give us a shot, and you can use PGA 20 for 20% off discount.
You got it. Zach, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Rich, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Have you heard of Face Forward Technology? It's a new innovation in golf iron design. Hi, I'm Michael Bishop, and I design Pro Series golf irons to help you hit your iron straighter and higher while increasing ball carry and distance. Improve your iron play today. Go to ProSeriesGolfIrons.com. We offer free shipping within the continental U.S. For cleaner contact and better feel and control, go to ProSeriesGolfIrons.com.
Hey, do you guys listen to the Back Nine Boys like I do? I gotta listen to the Back Nine Boys. How would I know what's going on in the world of golf unless I'm listening to Rich Styles and the Back Nine? Oh, you're wondering who this is. This is Randy the Tank Tantlinger with Team USA versus Team Scotland Amateur Golf Championships. And when I want quality golf information, there's only one guys to tee it up with, and that's the guys at the Back Nine Network.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles, and we're with Adam Shupak with Golf Week magazine. And Adam, you had a fantastic week last week covering the U.S. Open. What are your takes from that, and what do you think was one of the most memorable moments?
Well, I think I love just a good old school U.S. Open where par was a good score, and guys were getting so angry they're breaking tee markers and forgetting to mark their balls. They're so frustrated and like losing their train of thought. So that's something I really enjoyed. I don't not super, I don't want these guys to be that way every week, but every once a year at least, it's good to
Yeah.
see them really kind of struggle and just re reward precision. These guys can get away with a lot of stuff, but with the rough the way it was at Oakmont, that didn't happen. And then, I mean, the memory is going to be that putt on 18 by JJ Spaun. It just
Oh
my jaw
yeah.
ground when that went in. I mean, I was just hoping that he wouldn't three putt it, because then we'd have to come back on Monday for a playoff, and that wasn't going to be any fun. So yeah, I mean, that was just it was the longest putt anyone made all week. I think I saw the stat that's the longest putt he's made all season.
Wow.
So it was just pretty special, and then great reaction. You get to see those things happen once every bit. It doesn't happen too often anyway that a guy
Right.
is out from 65 feet on the final green to win one of the big four majors. So that's one I think they'll be replaying for years to come, and something that's going to stick with me for a long time.
Adam, why is it that we as golfers, amateur golfers, like to see the pros suffer? I mean, and go through what they went through at Oakmont.
We love seeing them play, hit these incredible shots, but I think it makes us feel a little better about our own inadequacies on the golf course. They're not that much better than us. But yeah, I just think, we see them do these incredible things all the time, and win with scores, close to 30 under at some of these tournaments these days. That
Right.
These guys are so good. The equipment's great, and they've used their range finders and their TrackMans and all sorts of training off the course to get the most speed out of their swing, and they're they're the best in the world, but you know, it's still the game is tough, and I think it makes us all feel a little better when we see Rory McIlroy so upset that he's throwing a club, and Wyndham Clark's gonna smash a locker. I don't know if we like that, but makes us feel a little better about ourselves.
Do you think they get so frustrated because they're so used to perfect conditions all the time? And obviously Oakmont was in great condition, but with 5-inch rough and narrow fairways and some of the weather and stuff like that, that they just don't handle it well and just kind of get out of their own skin and get upset?
Well, I think we have reached a point where they trick the courses up too much. I mean, they were running greens close to 15 on the stint meter. It's just too much. And the rough was 5 inches high. And basically if you hit it in there, I mean, Corey Connors had to withdraw from this week's tournament. He hurt his wrist. That's how bad the rough was. I like a lot of these elements, but the fact, I think it just goes back to the equipment being, you know, the game's gotten a little too easy for the pros. So when they trick it up and try to make it in a setup that's going to make par difficult, and you know, they called it a par 70 this time, and they had 301 yard par threes. That played like par fives. And then you have a couple drivable par fours. You know, they're mixing it up. They're trying to make it as interesting as they can. But I do think that they probably, you know, if they roll back the ball when they come back in 9 years, and I think 2034 will be the next time that Oakmont's hosting, they might not have to have a 300-yard par three.
Do you think the USGA goes a little bit overboard in how they set up a golf course? So the winner, like a lot of them, have been even par or even over par?
I think they have on occasion gone right up. You know, they have to kind of go right up to the line in order to really test these guys because of how good they are these days. And so sometimes they have situations where they cross it. And you know, I think back to Shinnecock's the one that jumps in my head first, when Phil Mickelson got so frustrated he started playing a little hockey with the ball on the green. And you know, sometimes they'll lose a green, or they're just going right up to it, to the edge, and sometimes they're crossing it. To me, the one thing that bothered me about the way this U.S. Open finished was they didn't move up the tee times or go to three. I think they should have probably moved up to gone out in threesomes and finished around 3:30, 4 o'clock. They knew this rain was coming. You ended up with a 96-minute delay, and you know, we'll never know for sure, but I don't think J.J. Spahn wins if there wasn't that break in the action where he was able to go back and, get himself in a better mental state, talk to his coaches.
Yeah.
During that time period, he went from shooting 40 on the front nine and starting with five fives on the first five holes and five over through six, came back and shoots 32 on the back nine. It was like a different guy after that break. And I think some of the weather conditions and the casual water was a factor. You know, if Sam Burns doesn't, if he's given that drop on 15, does he still make double there? They're just, you know, I think they brought a lot of additional factors into play that really shouldn't have happened. And it's all, you know, it really comes down to TV probably wanted that, you know, seven o'clock finish. And, you know, we almost had to go to Monday because of the weather.
Do you think that Sam got the right decision on his shot?
I kind of go back and forth. I really don't. I think there should have been. I think he should have gotten relief. But these are the guys, the USGA. They're the ones who make the rules. They should. They, you know, they had two people come and he got a second opinion, and there was a. They didn't end up giving it to him, but I do think that looked like casual water to me. I was out there just when I was walking in for, I got stuck out on the course. I was soaked to the bone. I was out with the leaders on eight, when it started raining. So, you know, I will tell you, just in that little time walking back and the little time that it rained, the course was pooling with water, and it was casual water everywhere. I was surprised that they were able to get back and play as early as they did. It's, you know, incredible job by the superintendent staff to get the course ready and be able to resume play. I didn't think it was going to happen. And I think I would not be surprised if Sam Burns will be, you know, thinking I got screwed for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think he should have been able to have a drop. I mean, it was definitely, as you saw from the shot, you saw on TV, you saw from the replays, that when he hit it, there was just overload of water that came out of that shot, and that resulted in his double bogey. Who knows what would have happened
there
if he would have had that free draw.
There had been so much rain all month, really.
Yeah.
And just that little bit that we had had at that point already had made such a difference that they, you know, you could see them squeegeeing it and how much water was coming up. I just think that given the circumstances, they should have been a little more lenient on that one.
Well, looking back, and you're walking in the rain, you're walking in puddles, you're drenched, everybody else is, there's water on the course. Do you think that rather than had them come back out to play after an hour and a half delay, that they should have maybe finished it on Monday when maybe the course would have been in better shape? Or do you think it was all guided by, we got to end this by 7 for TV?
Yeah, I think it was, let's get this done because people want to, they want to see the winner on Sunday. The fan, they don't want to bring the fans back. It's Monday. The Monday finish is always so hard because, you know, so many of these volunteers, they've given their time and stuff, but they've got, a lot of them have to fly home or go back to work, and to get everything back is always such a huge task. Yeah, I think, you know, so I think they really wanted the Sunday finish. I think the smarter, I agree. I think that should have been considered because it was so close. I mean, they almost didn't get it done.
Right.
And if there was a playoff, if he three putts there and they go to a playoff with Bobby Mack, that would have happened on Monday. But I really just think they should have looked at what that weather forecast was going to be and said, shoot, we got to move this up. The PGA Tour does it a lot. It hurts the TV ratings because people don't want to watch something they already know the result of, and not as many people maybe would have watched it if it finished at 3 o'clock. But, you know, this is a national championship and it should be treated with a little more care and concern about let's get the right champion. And I do think that played a big role in JJ Spahn getting the title.
What do you think now this does for JJ Spahn? I mean, he's won a PGA Tour event. Now he's won a major. What do you think, how is this going to affect him going forward?
I mean, I think his confidence is sky high right now. You know, he's one of those guys who just needed a little more belief. He's figured out, he found a putter that's really helped him. And, you know, but he still feels like a bit of a grinder. He's improved a ton. I mean, he was 164th, I think, in the world last year at this time. Easily the most improved player of the past year. I think he's going to make a Ryder Cup team. I think he's going to enjoy, you know, the perks of what being a U.S. Open champion is. Do I think he's going to win, you know, 10 times now because of this? Probably not. I think, you know, it was interesting to hear how close he was just a year ago to hanging it up and looking for something else to do and wanting to be home with his family more because he's missing so many cuts and potentially, you know, was in danger of losing his card last year until he kind of got things together late in the season.
Yeah.
You know, so I think he's made a huge leap. But do I think he's going to stay up there? I think he, you know, the U.S. Open sometimes identifies a Scott Simpson and, you know, some players who they just have the game that one week.
And I
think he may go down more in that category than becoming a multiple major winner at this point.
I totally agree with you. One of our guys who actually was here on St. Simon's Sea Island for a while, now he's moved on to Jupiter, Ben Griffin, has had an unbelievable few weeks on the PGA Tour, enough to at least get a look for the Ryder Cup team. Do you agree?
I do. I think he's definitely under consideration right now, the way he's playing. I mean, he keeps this up, he's going to make it on merit in that top six, which is pretty hard to do, especially, you know, I don't think he had that many points coming into this year. You know, two wins, some other really strong finishes. I really like his game, and he's added length, and he's always been an excellent putter, and his short game is what helped him win the tournament at Colonial. So I like a lot of what he brings to the table, especially if he can keep it up. I mean, I think I'd feel, you know, he doesn't have the experience, but I think he might be a better pick than Jordan Spieth the way he's playing.
Yeah, I kind of agree. From mortgage banker not playing golf to all of a sudden coming back and winning two PGA tournaments within a month. I mean, that's just an incredible comeback.
Yeah, I'd say he and JJ Spahn are the two, you know, most improved players on the tour this whole season.
Adam, tell me about your book with Dean Beaman, Golf's Driving Force. I mean, I've met him down at the PGA show. An incredible man. He's got unbelievable stats and accomplishments with the PGA Tour and whatever he's done. Tell me a little bit about the book.
Well, man, that's my major. Very proud to have been able to do that, have Dean's participation in telling the story of how the PGA Tour became the success it is today. To me, you know, I was working at the World Golf Hall of Fame when he was inducted, and I was researching all of his achievements. And I thought at the time, man, where's the book on this guy? How come no one's written one? And I really, at that moment, I didn't think it should be me. But a couple of years later, after I had gone back to journalism school, I kind of conceived the idea of I want to write this book. And I asked him, and he said no. And I took a position at Golf Week and just would interview him and figure I'll get a little bit here, I'll get a little bit there in case he happens to die. At least I've talked to him for this, you know, I can write the book. And then, you know, I'd keep asking him, hey, what do you, you know, I'd love to do this book. What do you think? Have you changed your mind at all? And it was always no. But then one day I got an email. I happened to be at the PGA show. I was at the demo day, and he said, I'm ready to do the book. You still want to do it? And I didn't want to waste too much time, give him a chance to change his mind. I drove to see him in Ponte Vedra that weekend. And I think the guy, he's the person, the mastermind of what the PGA Tour is today. They're still pretty much running the Dean Beaman playbook. It was what Tim Fincham did. He was fortunate to have, you know, Tiger Woods come along during his tenure as commissioner, right? But basically still doing all the things that the Dean Beaman, you know, kind of came up with during his time as commissioner from 1974 to 94. And I was actually just writing today about Jay Monahan stepping down. I feel like, you know, they've kind of run the Dean Beaman playbook, and it's time to evolve. And I think the new person who comes in, you know, that's what he's going to be tasked with doing, taking it from being a nonprofit for all this time, which was genius decision by Dean Beaman. And now they've created this for-profit side of the business, and you know, they have private equity money now, and so that's, they got to figure out what they're going to do with that and how they're going to, you know, create enough returns to keep their investors happy, because this wasn't just a you know, out of the generosity and goodness of their heart that they gave 1.5 million billion to the PGA Tour. You know, they're expecting to make profits off that, just as they do in their other sports ventures. But I think, you know, Dean Beaman is on the Mount Rushmore of commissioners, and what he's done for the PGA Tour should never be forgotten.
Yeah, I totally agree. Adam, thank you for taking the time to talk with us. I'm glad you finally had a chance to get some dry clothes on and not stand in the rain. Appreciate it, and I hope you have a great day. Thank you.
All right, Rich. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show with Rich Stiles. Go to back9boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at back9boys.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines.
With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.